Music and Booze with Mo is produced and distributed by Eats Drinks TV, a service of the Center for Culinary Culture, home of the Cocktail Collection, and First Reel Entertainment, and is available wherever fine podcasts can be heard. The Center for Culinary Culture, telling the story of food and drink, one taste at a time. Welcome to Music and Booze with Mo. I'm Mo Herms, and I've worked in the music industry most of my life, so have met some pretty amazing musicians over the years. I also love a good cocktail, and I've encountered some really interesting bartenders as well. It seems that there is a lot of crossover, so when I can, I like to talk to musicians and bartenders about music and booze. Join us at the bar, won't you? Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by Barkeeper, a head shop for cocktail lovers, located at 614 North Hoover Street in Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Stop by for barware, vintage glassware, a carefully curated collection of spirits, and one of the most impressive selections of bitters anywhere. Follow them on Instagram and Facebook for information regarding spirits tastings. That's barkeepersilverlake.com. And also in the Virgil Village neighborhood of Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Welcome to Mo's Tropical Summer. As any regular listener knows, every summer I get to talk with people from all over the world, actually, who work or own bars with a bit of a tropical bent to them, and this summer is no exception. So sit back and relax, mix yourself a drink that has lots of fruit juices, rums, and maybe even an umbrella, and enjoy tropical summer. Everybody in Texas, if you happen to be catching this, the second week of June, it's Dallas Tiki Week, and we're going to talk to Jen Antonic, who is one of the creators of Dallas Tiki Week, as well as the co-owner of Swizzle, a fabulous tiki bar in Dallas, where else? And she's going to tell us all about how she got to this point. It's kind of a fun story. So sit back with a Mai Tai and enjoy.
Whose idea was it to try to give people who've been drinking for 2 days shots of Malort on top of it?
That would be a combination of my husband, Marty, and our bar manager, Joseph. We are a Malort bar. We enjoy Malort. We like the idea of giving people Malort. We like the reactions of people drinking Malort. We think it's great.
Okay. So I recently interviewed someone who she said that Malort, she believed in the healing properties of Malort. She swore that if she had Malort during her night while she was drinking, that her hangover was not so bad the next day if she got into a little bit of trouble. Of course, I know plenty of Chicago people who are just like, Malort's great. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. you're just proving how tough you are. But now that it's out there in the world, now that it's escaped the confines of Illinois, I've had like cocktails made with it, very lightly made with it. It's showed up here and there. And I'm like, okay, this can work if you don't abuse it, but I'm not quite at the shot level yet. So I find it very admirable that you guys are like, you can have a really amazing drink that we're known for, or shot of Malort.
So what we could have done and we didn't do, we could have done the Malort cocktail that's on there. So the whole wheel would have been Malort, but we decided to be nice.
Wow.
The martini swizzle shine instead.
Very kind, very kind. But okay, well, you should introduce yourself. So tell us who you are and your bar and all that kind of biz. We'll start there.
Sure. My name is Jen Antonic, and I have a little bar on Greenville Avenue in Dallas called Swizzle. We are a tiki bar and Polynesian restaurant. It was my husband's idea to start it. When I moved here from California 12 years ago, I said, where are your tiki bars and where's your Trader Joe's? And neither of those things existed. So we waited for someone to do it. And nobody else did it. So he said, let's do this. And I said, okay, keep dreaming, buddy. Like, well, yeah, sure. We'll do this bar thing. Like we're both bartenders and we've been in the industry for a while. And he just had this dream. And we decided to start doing pop-ups because we were looking for a brick and mortar. Mm-hmm. And the longer that took, the more frustrated he got. And he said, you know what, let's just see if there's even a point to this, you know, like if maybe we're doing the wrong thing, maybe tiki's not a thing in Dallas. And mm-hmm. so we had our first pop-up in 2016, May of 2016. And we had a trickle of people that we didn't know. And then the next week it was a little bit more and a little bit more. And every week it just grew and grew and grew. And we said, okay, we are onto something. Like Dallas really needs a tiki bar. And so our events, we started doing the Waipuna Tiki Fleets in June at a Christmas event every year. So those got bigger and bigger. And soon people from Houston were coming, people from Oklahoma, Louisiana. And it was like, all right, like as it got bigger and bigger, we were like, we have to do this. This is definitely a thing. So we kept looking for brick and mortar places. And we found a place and we signed in September of 2019 and scheduled to open in March of 2020. And then nothing opened in March of 2020. So it gave us a little bit more time to say, okay, all those things that we were going to do a little bit later, let's just do them now. So everything basically like we were 100% ready by the time we opened in November of 2020.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. Oh, yeah. I mean, I got married in September of 2019 and our honeymoon was supposed to be in April of 2020. So there's all that. We're only now rescheduling it. But yes, it was like, doors closing, but I have talked to other people who were also in that position of, well, we were going to open, but since we're not, let's just make things perfect. You know, let's just fine tune this. What can we do in the meantime? And I mean, tiki bars, as you know, are never done, right?
No, very true. Very, very true. And I unfortunately am a perfectionist in the way that I decorated like every inch of the place. So whenever we get gifts or we get, you know, buy new art, it's like, well, now where are we going to put it?
The whole so remodeling, right?
Exactly. So I have to like shuffle things around every once in a while.
So when did you start bartending?
I started bartending actually when I moved here to Dallas. I was a server for a long time, always wanted to get behind the bar. It was super obsessed with bar culture, I guess would be the best way to put it. As a young teen, I was collecting swizzles and, you know, tiki mugs and any glassware, any bar books. And our, you know, like my collection only grew and it didn't really dawn on me to even like become a bartender until I moved here. And I said, you know what? I'm gonna leave the job that I'm at, which was a corporate, you know, like just generic restaurant, and I'm gonna do this thing. And 3 months later, I was doing the thing. So
wow, that's amazing. So what kind of space were you working at when you first started?
So it was it's a bar and grill. A bar and grill. You know, get your feet wet, learn all the basic stuff, and you know, as they called it, popping bottles back in the day. And
yep.
my husband was in another corporate place as well. And I said, you know what, you really should come over here, over to this part of the neighborhood and really like get out there and do some more stuff, because he was, you know, the corporate, you can only do so much. And he started doing that too. And he really dove in hard on the cocktail scene. So hit to, you know, the I hate the term mixologist, but mm-hmm. he became, you know, more very much on that front, where I was just kind of like, yeah, I'll make you a mean old fashioned, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's all valid though. I mean, I think, you know, working in a place like you were working on is, like you said, it's a great place for a foundation, right?
Mm-hmm.
You get Absolutely. In there and people are only ordering so many things, really.
Yeah, that's true.
So what was one of the first things you remember learning when you were back there? I mean, I talked with someone once who was talking about how he was making gin and tonics, but didn't realize that tonic was different from soda. And he would like spray soda into the drink instead of tonic. He's like, but nobody ever said anything. I'm like, that's because nobody knew. You were just working at like TGI Fridays.
Yeah, they were just there to get drunk on happy hour. They didn't care.
Totally. So when you first started, what were your revelations when you first started bartending?
So the types of things that people ordered, the stuff that I would never drink, I don't want to throw brands under the bus. I won't say any particular things, but basically anything in Red Bull, you know, I was like, no, thank you, I'm good.
They expect to be thrown under the bus at this point. Yeah. Red Bull knows.
Like, they know. Red Bull's fine, I guess. Not my cup of tea. I have high blood
pressure. They're doing great. They're doing great without us. It's fine.
Exactly. It's true.
Since this is a podcast, I have to announce to anyone listening that there is a dog on the call now. Yeah. And this is super special. There is a puppy on the call. It's just gone next level.
I have a little baby named Beans. He is a miniature pincher chihuahua mix, and he likes to be involved in all the things that we do, whether it's bar or patio hanging out. Or
I was going to say, is there a drink named after Beans? Does Beans
There's have not, but their there own cocktail? Be one. At all of our pop-ups I would bring him, because a lot of the bars that we did pop-ups at, he was allowed because they weren't restaurants
outside.
He became sort of a little mascot for Swizzle, for sure.
Oh, that's awesome. I love it. It's always nice to be able to have puppy space in any of those spaces. When we had a patio during pandemic, and it was great because we could have puppy hours, you know, we're like, sweet. It was so, made everything so much better to have puppies around.
Definitely.
Okay, so back to you and your first bartending gig. So
we learned,
revelations, the things that you, when you first got there, you were like, oh, really? What? this is something
how this goes. the thing I still get complimented on is how many drinks I can hold in one hand. Ooh, I remember the day I was taught that, you know, sometimes it's three, sometimes it's four. I can get a shot glass in there too. I'm only 5'2" and some change, but I can hold a lot of glassware. And I remember that day learning that, and cocktail orders, you know, I would sit in front of my husband and I go, okay, how do you make this thing or this? And what's funny to me is that I had all these bar books. I had all these, you know, like the Esquires and the, all these different like sort of vintage books. And I never learned how to make any of the drinks. I just looked at them going like, wow, one day I'm going to get behind a bar and learn how to make a Manhattan. But I was like, hey, honey, how do I make a Manhattan? You know, like, you know, and learning, you know, that old fashioned becomes a Manhattan, becomes a, you know, a Rob Roy. Yeah. You know, how those things work was really interesting to me, sort of like the evolution of a cocktail and how it progressed.
So when did you find yourself out from behind the popping bottles and in a more crafty kind of vibe?
So I hopped around a bunch after that place had gotten bought out and it shut down. And I worked at a beer bar for a minute and I was miserable. Mm-hmm. I was like, beer is not my thing. This is not where I belong. And so I went to a couple different places the same company ended up opening up another place. And that's when we really leaned in towards the crafter side. We wanted to be that place in the neighborhood, that was, you know, steaks and salmon and had this kind of nicer program. So, we had my favorite thing to make on there was the Singapore sling and nobody else liked making it. They're like, it's too many things. I don't like it. Like, guys, it's not that hard. You grab these two bottles and these two bottles and these two bottles, you know, and, but for me, for my brain, it wasn't that big of a deal, but for popping bottles, it was a lot, you know? So
you were just already tailored for tiki cocktails.
Yes.
You were liking that. You're liking the multi-ingredient thing, which, you know, people joke around about it, like, oh, you're competing with your cocktail competition with your six ingredients, you know, let me show you this tiki drink.
Yeah, it's true. And it definitely, I think a tiki tender, you know, it really takes a type of person, who's willing to learn all of that and to, sort of have the drive and the want to do that on a regular.
Yeah. Right. So you were dabbling a little bit in the tiki stuff. And like you said, there was no scene there. So you had to create it for yourself. So you weren't a full-time, I've never heard tiki tender before. I'm so glad that you just said that because it's so perfect. So you became a full-on tiki tender when you opened your own place.
Yes. Yes. So that's was sort of the step. My husband and our bar manager and business partner, those two, really took the reins on a lot of that. We also had another person that was with us. And as we did our pop-ups and things, it was like, okay, what kind of cocktails do we want to present? So, you know, we went through all the Beach Bum Berry books. We went through all the, you know, the Smuggler's Coves and all of the big books and said, okay, which ones do we want to represent us and how do we make our own? And they really like sat, they tailored all of that. I focus more on the event planning and the pop-ups themselves of like getting the word out there. When we opened, it was like, they really sort of like honed in the menu and then I worked on the decor. And so like, they really sort of took on the whole thing, but there's something special about the way a tiki bar smells. And so much of that is in the ingredients, you know, the cinnamon and the orange and all of it.
It's like citrus and burnt cinnamon, you know, that's like the smell when you walk in there. And I think it takes a while to figure out that's what it is, but you're right. You're absolutely right. They have a very distinct smell.
Yeah,
for sure. That's making me nostalgic.
Matter,
yeah, totally nostalgic. Not like I haven't been in a tiki bar within the last week, but so you yourself evidently have always had a love for all things tiki, because you were saying before, you know, you were back in California, I guess you lived in California. So when did that kick in?
So for me, tiki itself is sort of like as a collection of sort of another type of bar accoutrement, sort of, you know, that sort of way. And my mom was also a hula dancer, and she listened to Hawaiian music all the time growing up. And
where was this?
In California.
Still where in California?
In the Bay Area. I don't know exactly where. I don't remember where she would dance. I just remember her dancing.
So that was in the Bay Area, which definitely has always had, I mean, I grew up in Southern California, so that's like but I lived in the Bay for a long time, but so Southern California is very surfy, so for me it was just that surf culture. But I know up in the Bay there's a lot more of the cultural side of it that's always been there. So your mom was doing hula.
She was a hula dancer. So my grandfather was born in the Philippines. He lived in Hawaii for many decades. Had basically a whole life over there, and then moved to California, met my grandmother, and then enrolled all the girls. He was, there's three of them, the three sisters, and they were all hula dancers growing up. And my mom just really like hung on to it. And so, you know, I grew up listening to, you know, Hawaiian music and watching her. And there's a picture of me, I think when I was five, like pretending I'm her, like dancing in my little hula outfit. And
that's so sweet. Oh my God, I love that so much.
I would have learned myself though. I don't know why. It's like one of those things, like, all, you know, like, hey, mom, why didn't you teach me this thing? I should have
been. So one you guys day. Are probably having lunch at Trader Vic's when you were a kid, you know?
Yes, like, yeah, absolutely.
So you were saying I was collecting Swizzle sticks. I'm like, how? You were a kid. How are you getting Swizzles already?
You know, my dad actually used to take me to a lot of different, like, events and antique stores and parades and all kinds of stuff. And so I was always obsessed with the vendors. Of course, I'm a girl, I like to shop. So what do they have? And I think it was just part of the 90s, you know, like that swing culture came back.
True. That's, you know, when I was in the Bay. I was in the Bay at that time.
That's the best time.
Totally. I'm at the Tonga Hut. I'm at Trader. I was called Trader Vic's Punk Rock Birthday because we go there for birthdays.
Awesome.
But, you know, Tonga Hut, it was pre-Smuggler's Cove, of course. Those are the places that you went to. And it was just like so much fun. And Club Deluxe for the swing dancing, you know, all of that. Yeah. Bimbos for whatever. Yeah. So you were in it.
Yeah. And I was too young to be going to any of the stuff, but I wanted to be a part of it. Mm-hmm. So I'd listen to the music and I'd have my little martini glasses full of like water or soda or whatever it was. And then like, you know, I'd be in my room, which was like decked out in like mid-century and a little bit of IKEA kind of sprinkled in there, because they have like all the greens and the you know, olive shaped, you know, bedspreads and all those cool things.
They had all the good mid-century colors at IKEA. Mm-hmm. You know, they always did. It was a good compliment to that. So, you know, actually you're bringing up the music thing, and this is also about music. So I want to know, what were you listening to with your water glass martini or your water martini? Were you all in the Royal Crown Review mode?
Yes. Royal Crown Review, Brian Setzer, Big Bad Buddha Daddy, you know, Indigo Swing out of the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. That, you know, I had to be a part of that. And every time Royal Crown Review is the one that broke my heart the most, because they'd play at Bimbo's quite often. Yeah. And I was never old enough. And then finally, when I turned 18, the swing scene kind of like went away. And I was like, no. them. I've actually hung out with them, so that was cool. Big Bad Voodoo Daddy, I got to see actually for the first time at the Alameda County Fair. They had Swing Day, and they were the headliner, and that was the best.
That's awesome. Did you ever play any music yourself?
I played piano growing up. I hated it.
Let me ask you this question though. Was that your dad's decision or your mom's?
Mom's.
Okay. I have met so many Filipinos, halves, quarter, whatever, and they've all, as she points wildly, they all had to play piano.
Yes. They have to do an instrument. That's the thing.
Well, it seems like he was always piano, and I'm like, come on, isn't piano like one of the most expensive ones? You got to buy that big thing, or you just go to classes, I guess. Did you have fun playing piano?
No. I think when I could know the song, and I was like, hey, look at me, I can do Deck the Halls. It's really cool. It's really easy. And then anything else, right hand, left hand, that was not a thing for me. I'm not really very good at, I don't know how I've been bartending this long, because I can't really do both at once, but.
But that piano thing was real.
it was a real thing. I really wanted to get actually into what you do is the music industry. And that was, to me, I was I'm going to do the music industry. I'm going to move to LA. This is what I'm going to end up doing. And ended up becoming I really wanted to get actually into management or PR. Mm-hmm. And I ended up doing just that, but in a different industry.
Well, what were your dream bands that you wanted to manage? I mean, I'm sure you were still going to live music all the time if you had that inclination.
I did. Basically, if there was an 80s band out there, I saw them. Interscope, actually nothing in particular. I was really obsessed with Interscope for some reason. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of the bands that I listened to were on Interscope. And so I kind of paid attention to who they had or why they paired. I think, I want to say U2 was on there. I don't really remember, but I think No Doubt was on there and a couple mm-hmm. other people. And they were, you know, kind of pairing random people together, but that was the record company. And they were like, hey, you know, like come see these people. So that was sort of who I really wanted to work for. I don't know what types of bands I wanted to manage, but I knew they were going to be a pain in the butt. I knew I wanted a problem child. I wanted to really whip them into shape, you know, like, get over here, we're waiting for you at the venue, you know, that kind of thing.
Oh my God, seriously. It's like, if you want to be mom to a bunch of, well, I guess you're running a bar now. So, I mean, I make this joke. I'm like, you know, running a bar is like just the same thing as having children. Just, some are just drunk. They're just drunk children. You know, or whatever, running around, you still need to manage that kind of thing. So somehow you took all of this energy and this tiki love and everything, you turned it into your dream bar. So when you left, what made you leave? What made you come to Dallas in the first place?
I met my husband. He's
right there.
Arms are up, his big old smile. He's like, that was me.
I brought her to Texas.
Yeah, he did. To the chagrin of most of my friends and family, I am here and I love it. I met him actually because I had to use the restroom, and I was on my way to the airport, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to die if I don't stop somewhere. So I ended up stopping at this restaurant and bar, and he came up to me and he said, what's a Betty like you doing in a place like this? And I was like, he's really cool. Like, he gets me, you know, and it was all history from there.
Hey, oh my God. I love it. That's wonderful. So there you are out in Texas and you're like, where are my tiki people at? They're nowhere. What am I going to do? So you work to create it yourself. It sounds like.
Yeah. I mean, that was sort of the point, was just to find the community and mm-hmm. see, like I said, if there was one out here, and slowly but surely they came through, and we are so blessed to have such a big community here mm-hmm. and very, I think, tight knit, like, you know, everyone gets along very well. It's just a very chill vibe, as you would expect a tiki mm-hmm. Community to be, very low judgment, very like, let's just hang out and mm-hmm. let's just drink some drinks and let's talk about rum. And, I would say younger and older, definitely a demographic of 20 somethings to 60 somethings plus, nice. You know, and, it's a little bit of everybody. And, and we're just, we're so lucky to have such a good community here.
Well, you've actually taken, I don't want to say advantage, that's the wrong word. You've actually taken the opportunity, now that you've found your people and all this, to even expand outside of your bar with the tiki thing, right? You guys are part of Dallas Tiki Week.
Yes.
It is your thing, right?
It is our thing.
you took the pop-up and you made it a week.
Yeah.
Tell me about this. How did it come into being, et cetera?
So it just started out as an idea that we had to do like a bus tour between some of the other places that did tropical cocktails at the time, because there was no tiki bar. And it started out as that. And we got together with the USBG, who had a tiki week in Austin. Mm-hmm. And it kind of became a thing for rum education and a little bit of sort of like the tiki aspect of what else can we do, you know, bring vendors in and do the sort of shopping events, because everyone in California's got that, and in Florida they've got that, but here in the middle we're like, hey, yeah, don't forget about us, we're here too. And being able to bring so many artists here, carvers, art, you know, painters, jewelry makers, all of that, it's a really good feeling.
How many years has this been going on?
This is our sixth year. So we skipped 2020 and 21, but we, it's our sixth, tiki flea.
That's really
that
cool.
We're doing. So
when is it happening this year? I think it's going to happen. It's happening. Yeah. I think when I'm going to air this.
It's happening now, June 11th to the 18th. And that is our big vendor day.
Does it take place kind of all? Does you still bus people around to other bars? Is it kind of centrally located now? What does it look like today?
So it's definitely all about the Dallas and Fort Worth venues. Mm-hmm. So we have three tiki bars here, with Swizzle in Dallas, and then the Four Kahunas in Arlington and Tarantula in Fort Worth. So we have a bus tour that does that one day on Wednesday that takes them to every place, so you know, a little taste of, you know, how we're all different, how we're all the same.
Yeah.
And throughout the
one
week,
day that bus should take everybody home too, like they'll be standing at the end of that.
we do get Uber codes for everybody to get home safely. Safety is our number one priority.
Yep.
Especially on the bus tour night, like that is number one. So yes, there will be Uber codes, everyone will be safe, hopefully. The rest of the days are all different. We try to highlight different venues that have a tiki cocktail program or just have a great rum selection. Mm-hmm. We bring in different people. Last year we had Beach Bum Berry and Ed Hamilton, nice, which was awesome.
Yeah.
And this year we have Doc Parks. Fans, you know, mm-hmm, you have Pagan Idol and Zombie Village and Wilfred's. So he'll be actually at Swizzle on the 12th. And then pretty sure now I'm gonna say that we're gonna do it. Cocktail Wonk, Matt Petrick, I believe his name is.
Oh, yeah,
with the Minimalist Tiki Book, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm, he should be here as well on Saturday the 17th.
Oh, that's awesome. That's a lot of fun. So speaking of rum education, I'm assuming for you, once you started taking your love of tiki outside of just the accoutrement, as we were saying, and diving deep into the cocktail category of it, because I mean, for a lot of people out there, in the industry, it's kind of two different things. I mean, you know, there's the lifestyle side of it, and then there's the drink side of it. And, you know, tiki drinks were around in the 30s, right? As they started popping up. So for you, when you started diving deeper into that, I'm sure you started learning much more about rums. And back to the revelations question, what were some things when you started doing that, you're like, oh man, this is changing my life right now. Rums, cocktails in the tiki world, things like that. I know you love your Singapore sling, but that's gin, isn't it?
It is gin.
That's not even with the rum.
I enjoy making a Singapore sling. The more complicated, the more exciting it is to make for me.
So I'm trying to think what the most complicated tiki drink is and how it must be your favorite in the world. And I'm just like, what is it? I don't know.
I feel like the rum barrel is pretty intense.
Yeah.
Rum barrel for me is one of my favorite drinks to drink. And it is very complicated to make as well. A lot of steps.
Too many rums to
learn. Actually, how similar rum is to bourbon in terms of the flavor palette, and not all of them, of course, but a lot of the ones that we had are surprising to me in that it's almost the same flavor profile. You have your oaks, mm-hmm, you have your cherries, you have your vanilla, you have your hopefully not too much vanilla because then you're drinking the wrong thing. But you know, there's a lot of similarities in that, and of course the agricoles and the funkiness, as they call it. It's kind of hard to describe it sometimes, but that ocean taste, the salty taste, the grassy. Mm-hmm. I love the complexity of that and how it completely makes a different cocktail. So that to me was sort of my rum revelation of like, you can have something that tastes exactly like a bourbon, or you can have something that tastes like nothing you've ever had before, but it tastes like the heritage of that island, you know, and that's
totally
amazing.
Totally. I mean, I think of like agriculture is kind of like scotch, where, you know, it's like you said, you can taste the island. You can taste like, you can taste that moss. You can taste that algae, which sounds gross, but it's not, you know, you
but
can
it's not,
taste
it's delicious.
You can taste those things. So, do you, aside from the Singapore Sling, when you got into the rum, what was a favorite tiki drink that you made? One of your first favorite tiki drinks to make? Do you remember?
Honestly, the traditional way to make the Mai Tai, I feel like it's very simple, but it's so many times I came to a bar in California, you order a Mai Tai, it may not be exactly what you want, but for the most part, it's going to taste like a Mai Tai or be really close to it. In Dallas, when I moved here, I went to many bars, to many different bartenders who were, you know, were from all over the place, New York or Chicago, and they did not know how to make a Mai Tai. And they didn't have anything to make it with, you know, and they would try and it was not what I wanted. And so, the first time I had a Mai Tai here, I was just like, oh, finally. So being able to actually have that product, you know, that we had the homemade orgeat that we did and being able to provide that for people meant a lot to me.
It's so satisfying, right?
Yes.
Oh, that's amazing. I love that story very, very much. Cause like, you know, when you have a good Mai Tai, there's just nothing like it.
Nothing
it's
like
really
it.
Really a perfect drink. Have you heard about that Appleton 17 that's coming out? I think it's coming out like next week, and it's like only 1,000 bottles are being made, but Joy Spence of Appleton has decided to replicate the Jay or the Ray and Nephew 17 year that was supposedly originally used, and since Appleton comes from the same heritage as them, she's like, I have the ingredients, kind of, sort of. Like, she could replicate it. But of course, they're only making like 1,500 bottles, and I'm sure it's going to be like crazy expensive. But the quote from her, like, she released a press release and said, I had a Mai Tai with it and it was perfect. And I'm like, don't rub it in to all of us normal people. We'll never be able to have this.
We'll never get it.
Work it. You're going to see Cocktail Wonk. Work it. He gets everything. Yeah. But yeah, good, I know. Hey, Matt, actually, I'm going to see him probably in a week, so maybe I'll bug him first. But yeah, you gotta, a good Mai Tai is fantastic. So for you at your bar, you're at Swizzle, what kind of menu do you guys have? Classics and the ones that you guys create yourselves?
Yeah, we actually started out with a huge program. We did 50 cocktails, mostly classics and quite a few of our own. And we kind of dwindled it down as, you know, being a tiki bar, you want to be able to do everything. Well, we can still do everything, but we don't need to necessarily confuse the non-tiki customer, you know, with so many options. So we narrowed it down, we have, it's about half classics and half originals. And we have actually one of our originals, the Martiki Swizzle, was invented here in this house during quarantine. And it is actually in the Texas Cocktails book by Nico Martini, volume 2, the red cover. It's, I think, one of the ones that we're definitely like most proud of.
And that you're known for. That was the sample that I had when you guys were representing out in California. Yeah. I got to try that one and it was delicious. And it did not have Malort in it. Thank you.
If anybody wants the Malort, we have the Northside cocktail. if you're avoiding that, the Martiki is.
So I got to ask you, what was one of your first creations that like is it still around today, or was it one that you tried it and you're like, this is great, and then a month later you're like, what was I thinking?
I think there was a couple of that, and I didn't do any of the programming for Swizzle because I left it to the people who knew a little bit more, because for that very reason, at my other job, I did play around a lot with some different rums, and actually quite often would take sort of the things that like we were getting rid of and be like, all right, how can I make this tiki? And and I think that in a way, it was good at the time, and as years progressed, it was like, nah, this is garbage. I don't even want to use this product in the bar. Like, what am I doing? So, so I leave it to the professionals on that. To like, I'm a professional, just in a very different way. Like for me, it was definitely, like I said, focused much more on like, look, everything's pretty. All these artists represented.
I do the same. Like, I would never even pretend to think I'm that qualified to come up with beautiful cocktails. Although my partners did force me to guest bartend one night, and it was a tiki night, and our sponsor was an Irish whiskey brand. So I had to do tiki drinks with Irish whiskey. And I was like, oh God, this is going to take me forever to try to come up with something. It was like a month. I took a month to come up with my drinks, but it worked. It totally worked. But at the same time, I was all, never make me do that again. That was so much pressure.
Well, I think in sort of the way that like rum is similar to bourbon, if you add a lot of different types of citrus, it really does pull through a completely different idea of what people think whiskey should taste like. So
absolutely.
It could be fun. I bet they were delicious. I bet
you made some they were. They were good.
Anyway.
I'm like, okay, now it's time to put the lessons that you've learned from every single bartender you've ever met over the last however many decades. You know, I was like, okay, what are the tricks? What can I do? But I'm also one of those perfectionist people. So I stressed myself out way too much on it. But when it was done, it was great and people liked it. And I'm lucky as you are to have a great supportive community. So when I said I'm doing tiki drinks at our tropical bar, they came and we're just like, we're just happy to be here drinking with you. And I'm all, you're very nice. Is it good? Yeah, it's actually good. Okay, good.
So even if you're saying that because you're my friend, I'm okay with it.
I'll dig it right now. Yeah, right. So a question I always ask is a pairing question. So I'm going to ask you to think of maybe just when you're home, chilling out, whatever, think of a song that you like listening to in your home and something you like drinking when you're chilling out at home. Or maybe if you're sitting in the bar when you're not working. You know, what would you want to be listening in the bar, and what do you want to be drinking? Something like that. Nice combo.
So for me, I think if I'm in the bar, actually, I have to think about it.
No, maybe not that. Maybe not that.
Let me think about this.
What
do
you guys play in the bar? What's your
A mix of exotica, of course, a lot of Hawaiian music that I grew up listening to.
Yeah, I was going to say, you have so much Hawaiian stuff that you grew up with that has to filter in. That always, whenever I listen to Hawaiian music, and not Jawaiian, Hawaiian,
yes.
You know, when I listen to Hawaiian music, it's I always find it so calming, and not the exotic kind, just that beautiful guitar, the beautiful ukulele, just the vocals are just always so pretty to me and just make me feel just peaceful. You know, all the time. I love it. So
I agree with that. Have you been to Hawaii?
Oh yeah. I'm like, I guess I was there in August. It was the last time I was there. Yeah. I've been out quite a few times. I love it. All the islands. I love them.
Agreed. It's hard to be there. And especially when you hear the music, whether it's live or not, to not feel something, you know, it's that same thing, whether you're in the tiki bar or just out, when you hear it, you feel connected somehow to nature. Mm-hmm. And there's just something about the sounds of it that just really transport you.
Where do you have any family out there anymore?
Not anymore. At least not that I know of.
So, all right, we got to come back to the song that you're listening to while you're having a drink.
Okay. So I think for me, Quiet Village by Martin Denny when I'm in the bar and drinking like a Three Dots and a Dash or just the classic Mai Tai. That to me is ultimate, right? You have your surrounding sound, the escapism is real, you know, you're not only just smelling it, you're tasting it, you're feeling it, you're hearing it. And I think that's really important. At home, honestly, anything by any of the Rat Pack, like, you know, whether it's Dean or Frank or Sammy, and it would be like an old fashioned, you know, probably.
Yeah. Cause that goes with Frank.
yeah, exactly. You know, and I think that's sort of my two worlds are sort of those kind of things and that kind of music.
Totally perfect. Totally perfect. Well, that seems like a good place to wrap things up. So you can give people all the social media, all the website stuff for Dallas Tiki Week, the bar, anything you want to throw out there right now.
You got it. Thank you so much. So if you're in Dallas and you want to come see us, swizzledallas.com. You can follow us at swizzledallas on Instagram and Facebook. For Dallas Tiki Week, it is much the same, dallastikiweek.com. You can see all of our events for this year or next and the wins after that as well. And at Dallas Tiki Week on Facebook and Instagram.
Sweet. Perfect. That's all the stuff. Thank you so much. And don't go away, but thank you so much for doing this today. I was so excited that I was going to get to talk to you because I've been hearing about Swizzle for years. And so it's just lovely, lovely to get to chat with you today. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Come fly with me, let's fly away. If you can use some exotic booze, there's a bar in far Bombay. Come fly with me, let's fly away.
Well, if you find yourself going to Dallas, then you've got to go to Instagram and look up at Swizzle Dallas so you can be clued in to all the tiki things happening in that city. Not just during Dallas Tiki Week. There's all kinds of bars that you can check out over there, and I'm sure Jen would be more than happy to clue you in on the little community that they have built there. It was so great to talk to Jen. I just can't wait to meet her in real life. I say that after all these interviews, you know, but when we first started talking, we were kind of like lost kindred spirits, you know. I wasn't wearing my flowers in my hair, but she was. And I was really jealous I wasn't wearing mine, even over Zoom. So thanks, Jen, so much for being a part of this. And you, the listener, will want to go over to my Spotify, Moherm Spotify, because Jen gave us like a 10-hour playlist of all kinds of rap hack, swing, exotica goodness that's going to be the soundtrack to your next party. Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by The Mermaid, a cozy neighborhood bar with an aquatic flair in the Little Tokyo area of downtown LA. Open 7 days a week, featuring tropical cocktails and snacks, The Mermaid also has a daily happy hour from 5 to 8 p.m. Follow The Mermaid on Instagram at TheMermaidLA to hear about upcoming events and check them out at TheMermaidLA.com. Head to 428 East 2nd Street, Los Angeles, for a drink. Thank you for tuning in to our barroom chats on Music and Booze with Mo. For more info about today's guest, or if you want to connect with me, check out my Facebook page, Mo Herms. Please subscribe to the podcast and feel free to tell all your friends about it. While you're there, give the show a rating and a review. It really helps to get the word out. If you want to hear the playlists our guests have curated, search She Be Mo on Spotify, S-H-E-B-M-O. Find pictures of the interviewees and the cool stuff they create on the Music and Booze with Mo Instagram account. Lower your expectations and join us at the bar. Till next time, cheers.